You're listening to the Sound Girls podcast with Susan and Becky from Central Florida. What are we talking about? How are you, Suze?
I'm okay, Becky.
I don't know how I am. People ask me that question and I'm like, I don't know.
You don't know how you are. I don't know how I am either.
Yeah. We're here.
Jonathan says he's fine.
I'm glad Jonathan is fine.
Yeah. So I am finally back. I went out for a week, so I was on vacation. We traveled to Pennsylvania, which people literally said, don't go there because we're from Florida.
Right.
Which is rude, but it was a family thing. We had to go. So anyway.
But is it rude?
No, it's not. Okay. My sister was such a jerk about it. She's like, well, you should know that up here, she's in Buffalo. She's like, you should know that other states other than Florida, they actually require you to wear a mask. And like, you're going to see that they make you wear it when you go into stores. And I'm like, Lola, what the hell do you think we've been doing this whole time? We haven't been the assholes who don't wear masks. Like, we make a point. We wash our hands. Like, we don't go to bars, even when they were open. Like, we didn't do those things. But she was so, like, rude about it. Like, what do you think of me? Just because I live in Florida, like, I'm automatically an idiot. Like,
we live in Florida, therefore we are the Florida men.
I know. But not all of us are like that, for sure.
For sure.
So
as I cough in the background, like, everybody pauses, like, oh my god, she has the COVID.
No, it's just allergies. Florida allergies are serious.
Legit.
So I go back to the church, my other job, and I missed three services at that point. So two Sundays and a Wednesday. And so they had someone else there while I was gone. And when I got back, I had no less than five people tell me that they were so happy that I'm back and that they missed me. And
nice. Like,
it's so great to have someone here who just, you know,
knows their
does
stuff.
The thing, knows what they're doing. And I was like, ooh, something happened while I was gone.
Right? I was like, somebody screwed up.
Oh, man.
Job so security and all that.
Seriously. And, you know, once again, I felt really grateful for still having both of my jobs. And I was telling you before that they just bought a broadcast console.
Yeah.
And so they have front of house, and now they're getting a broadcast console. And so they're going to have more than one person mixing, which is great.
Yeah.
Because our front of house guy is great. He does a really great job. But it's really hard to do both.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've never had to do both for that. He's also tracking everything.
That's a lot.
So, like, yeah, and I've never done all three. So he's like, we need somebody to do the broadcast. And I'm like, well, we know a lot of people.
Yeah. I was like, sign me up. I've been getting phone calls left and right this last week and a half about from different churches and other contacts I have that are like, hey, dude, you were in the church world for a while. You know, do you know anybody that would be willing to do a part-time job? And I've had three this week alone. And I'm posting mm-hmm. them on, you know, the Orlando Facebook, Sound Girls page and some of the other ones, you know, just, throw them up like wherever I can, you know, try and obviously they're mostly area specific, but yeah. You know, right now everybody in Florida is like, I live in Miami, but I'll drive all the way to Jacksonville for work, you know? And I'm like, I get you, but stay put, you know, still and keep your mask on and all that. But,
there's probably places locally that,
yeah. And there are, I mean, they're popping up everywhere. So that's one of the things I'm doing is trying to call these church people and say, hey, I can put you in contact with some techs. Here's what they're worth hourly. Here's what you should pay them. You know, now that might not be reality, but someone's has to have that conversation with them. And I want to make sure on the front end, they know, like, maybe when the COVID's over, you need to up this pay a lot more, you know, when other people are getting paid too, you know, so, but
yeah, allocate your budget.
Yep.
For what it should be, not necessarily what it is at the moment. I get that.
Yeah.
I try to do that too. They were really surprised at how much they should pay camera ops and video people and stuff like that. And I'm like, that's industry standard. And Orlando is pretty low compared to other places.
Yeah,
for sure. So it's important right now when people are kind of desperate for work that they don't undersell themselves, and it's easy to do that. I totally get it.
Yeah.
But if you are in a position to be able to advocate for someone else, which I'm so glad you're doing, and I'm trying to do it too, yeah. and just be like, look, this is how much they should get paid.
Yeah.
So
I even did like a small event this last weekend, and it was free for the whole community. And it's, you know, I mean, only 50 people could be there, and social distance mm-hmm. and masks and everything too. But, they wanted to continue to have the event. It was outdoors in a pavilion, you know, so it wasn't even in an enclosed space, but they, even after that, I mean, I gave them a hell of a discount on everything because they weren't making any money and they couldn't have vendors and all mm-hmm. that. So, you know, we just did it as like a 4th of July unity rally is what they called it. So a bunch of us came together, you know, like that. I say bunch, obviously under 50, but, but even the guy came over to me that was the head of it at the end and said, okay, I want to sit down and talk to you or have a Zoom call with you that talks about what this really looks like budget wise for next year and what. Mm-hmm. And I thought, yeah. And it's all because
that's awesome.
You just have that conversation on the front end, you know, and make sure they know it's because of COVID mm-hmm. times, not reality.
Yeah. Like we're doing this to be contributing to society and the community and stuff like that out of the goodness of your heart.
Right.
But also next year you got to pay.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And it's how's the worship really try to push that envelope, which I understand because I know they do a lot of stuff for charity yep. and they do a lot of like advocating on their own and they supply food and stuff to the community. So I totally get it. But at the same time, I have a skilled position. You have a skilled right. position. And if they want quality, they have to pay for it.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yep.
And they want quality because if you've got several thousand members, you want them to contribute money. It's got to be worth it to those people right. too.
Right.
So there's a balance there.
All of the communication things have to happen like they do in any other world, you know? And mm-hmm. I think this is a great time to educate people about what we do and how important we are to their development, to their, you know, their thing. So I think it's a good time to educate the public. And I'm seeing a lot of those kind of things popping up too, like on LinkedIn and stuff where it's like articles or blogs that are like, hey, make sure you have great streaming quality and get a professional. And I'm like, yay. I love seeing that stuff mm-hmm. finally coming into discussions, you know, instead of just, hey, go on such and such, you know, website and download this package and you could be an audio engineer, you know, like, so, yeah. So I like that people are talking about that and it's getting more and more recognized that we are professionals. We're just bantering oh, yeah. on and on today, Suze.
That's great. I had to have that conversation with them while I was out of town because they called and texted me. And I do offer them support for free sometimes.
Yeah.
Not all the time, but sometimes when I can, I try my best to help them, which is out of the goodness of my heart. But anyway, they were having issues with the graphics not working. And I told them over and over again, it's not the switcher. It's not the switcher. It's not the switcher. Like I had that thing set up so you didn't have to do anything. Anybody who had half a day of experience would have been like fine. And the issue was because they weren't paying a graphics designer. So no graphic designer meant the channels didn't have an alpha on them. So you couldn't key it out properly, or they were like speckly and that's messy when it keys out if you're doing the wrong type and stuff like that. Yeah. So they were having all these problems and I'm like, it's your graphics. You got to pay a graphics person. I've got one in house.
Right.
I got one right here. Like he'll do it for you. You just have to pay him. And they weren't willing to do that. And so they're now seeing the repercussions of yeah. it because they're having like some other person just put graphics together and it's just not working.
Yeah.
And so now they're learning a lot, which is good.
That's good. Because
now they're like, oh, I get it. That's why,
yep.
that's why it looks like that. So it's kind of cool because they're interested in learning. And they're being really open about it, which I feel like they weren't so much before.
Right. I'm finding that with a lot of different organizations, nonprofits, and like some smaller, even some smaller bar gigs that, you know, want to do streaming and stuff. And they've never really thought about a broadcast situation mm-hmm. or, you know, how can they do it? So I'm getting some interesting phone calls. But I love that people are searching it out and they know where to go to look for yeah. that, you know, And I'm seeing, so that's something I guess I'm seeing as being a positive that's coming out of this whole COVID thing, in which I don't know that there's many of those days right now, but I'm trying to focus on cool, positive things for our industry. And I see that as being one, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good that people are adapting better.
Cool. We kind of talk about that in the podcast that we have coming up with today with Robert Scoville. We talk a little bit about how things have improved over the last 40 years and where things are heading since he's been in the game, so to speak, pretty for a while. I won't tell anybody how old he is, but yeah. we recorded this podcast with Robert a few weeks ago, actually, and he kind of mentions or alludes to the Live Sound Summit in the podcast. So we kind of wanted to do a little, like, hey guys, just so you know, that already happened thing. Yeah. So
Live Sound Summit 2020 happened several weeks back for us now at this point. And that it went super great. I gave a presentation as well. Robert Scoville did. And then a bunch of our other sound girls gave presentations. And if you were part of that and you had signed up to see the live ones, you also get free access to watch all of the archives and the recordings.
Yeah.
So Nathan Lively has those up now. And I think they're all up now because he was doing them little by little when I would check back. But I'm sure at this point they're all up. And so you can rewatch any of those videos. So if you miss training, like I missed a bunch of them because I was still working.
Me too.
So I couldn't attend as many live as I wanted to, but those are still available. So you can still log back in and go back and watch those videos, which is awesome. I love that feature of it.
Yeah,
so you didn't just miss it. You didn't just miss it altogether. So that, I have the website and we'll put it in our summary
notes
for the podcast. Okay. Cool. But it's livesoundsummit2020.sounddesignlive.com. So if you were like busy, you didn't quite get it, you can still go back and watch the videos now, which is pretty cool.
Awesome. One other thing we wanted to mention is the scholarships are still open for accepting applications. There are a bunch of them on the soundgirls.org website. Please go on there and fill out the applications for scholarships because the deadline is the end of this month. So get it
in. They're pretty open. So if you are taking any kind of classes or even trainings that are sound related, that scholarship will apply towards them. So a lot of these trainings that you're doing in the meantime are covered under it. So
yeah, just go check them out.
Take the chance to apply because you can get some free training while you can, which is awesome.
Very cool. Hey, let's have an interview.
Yeah, let's do it.
Cool.
Robert Scoville is an accomplished concert engineer, senior specialist for Avid Technologies, an educator and trainer, and record company executive, and one of the most respected and decorated professional audio engineers in the field of concert sound. Widely regarded as the pioneer of the virtual sound check and multi-track archiving workflows for live sound, designing and deploying the first system in 1995, Robert is a member of the conception team for the Venue Live Sound Environment and helped lead DigiDesign into the live sound market. He has mixed concerts and live events of every conceivable format over a career that spans 35 years, with over 4,000 live events mixed to date and numerous engineering credits on CD and DVDs. His work has been the focus of dozens of feature articles in professional sound industry trade magazines. He has worked with Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Rush, Tesla, Jackson Browne, Foreigner, Alice Cooper, Matchbox 20, Toto, Air Supply, Def Leppard, Prince, and the Go-Go's, just to name a few. Your accomplishments are about as long as a tour bus with a trailer. Welcome, Robert Scoville, to the Sound Girls podcast.
Welcome,
that's awesome.
Robert.
Okay, that was the best intro I've ever heard. That was just awesome right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Clearly, you've been to my website where I, you know, which is just filled with self-promotion. You know,
that's
great.
What it's for.
I just copy and pasted your website.
There you go. Fantastic. Finally, somebody gets me. Yeah, great.
Like we were talking a little bit earlier, and I said, man, we could just talk about, you know, all the amazing things and artists and stuff you've worked with. But even doing a little research on you, I noticed that's everywhere already. So we kind of want to dive in to, like, just what Sound Girls do and how you are a brother in the industry to us. Oh, Susan's dog is on our Zoom call.
I know.
Call.
That's awesome.
I'm sorry.
Okay, now I'm
y'all.
Jealous.
We all just lost our minds a little bit because that's the cutest dog. And I know nobody can see the dog, but man, yeah, I got totally distracted. Sorry.
I'm so sorry. He's been so needy
oh,
tonight.
Oh, puppy.
He was sick last night, so.
Aw.
Yeah.
If my dogs come in, I'm just telling you, it's going to be a lot more disruptive than that dog right there. I'm just telling you, it's going to be on if my dogs come running in here.
What kind of dogs do you have?
I have a Maltipoo and a long-haired Chihuahua.
Oh, wow. The yucky ones.
He has all the attitude you will ever want to have in a dog.
The little ones are, like, always sassy.
Yeah.
I like it. I like the little dogs that think they're big dogs.
Mm-hmm.
That's my dog, for sure. I mean, their names are Gibson and Fender, so, you know, we're still working on... We're working on Rickenbacker. We're going to get a German Shepherd named Rickenbacker.
So. Oh,
yes.
Nice. Mine's a 50-pound Aussie Shepherd, and he's the most needy dog I've ever seen.
Awesome. So let's get back to the question I was going to ask, even though I don't remember what it was. But basically, we wanted to just talk about, you know, we know your daughter is a little bit in the business, too, and in the demographic of our Sound Girls, you know, and just your thoughts about our industry and where we are right now. It's obviously changed a lot in the 40 years you've been in the business. And kind of just what do you wish we all knew in our production world about one another?
Yeah.
You know, it's changed so much over the span of our lifetimes. Just what's one thing you wish, or a couple things you wish we all knew about one another in this business?
That everybody's got the skills to do it, or the capability, the possibility to do it. That's the ultimate bottom line of it. I mean, take away, you know, whether we're men, women, you know, monkeys, I don't care. You know, everybody's with the right training and the right life experiences has got the possibility to do this, you know. I mean, that's the ultimate message there.
Do you think it's always been like that? That's been the message? Or do you think there was a time?
That hasn't always been the message, but it should be.
Right.
You know, certainly not. And look, you know, you can't lose sight of the history here. You know, the history of this has been one that's been primarily men. You know, there's obviously some great outliers in the history of, you know, road crew work, so to speak. But this is still a very young industry, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, gosh, man, we haven't been around. I did my first professional gig in 1979. And, I mean, even then, I couldn't tell you how to get into this business because it didn't exist. The business just did not really exist at that point, let alone, you know, the thought of road crews and buses and all of that stuff. I mean, it's come so far just in, you know, 25 or 30 years here, you know. So we're still kind of getting our feet wet and trying to figure it out. And rightly, wrongly, I don't want to go there. But at the beginning of this, it was a male-dominated job. I mean, there's just no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Like I said, there were outliers like Tana Douglas and some of these other women. And, you know, I ran into, you know, I'll be honest and say, in my earliest days, let's call it from the 70s through, you know, maybe a good chunk of the 80s, I don't remember seeing very many women, especially on tour, in any positions other than in lighting. Like, I seem to see a lot of lighting and excellent ones. I mean, really, really great lighting designers, lighting workers. But I didn't see a lot in audio. I did run into some in audio, both in the studio and live. I think, forgive me, I don't remember her name, but I think the first female mixer I ever ran across was mixing Simply Red in the late 80s.
Ah, sweet.
Do you have any idea who it was?
I don't, but I do know Simply Red. I can find out. I'm sure somebody can email us in and find out.
She was excellent. I mean, absolutely excellent. Those shows sounded fantastic. And the other one, and maybe this is indication of our problem in the world. I don't remember her name either, but I was working at Whistle Lord Studios in Holland, and they had a couple of female engineers there, and they were just so good. it was, you know, it got me thinking. I don't want to go too far off on a tangent here, but
no, go.
You know what it showed me, even just then, just having my initial kind of contact with them in that context, was that, hey, women think different, and because they think different, they absolutely hear different. Like, they have a complete different set of sensibilities to music that I have as a man. I, there's no doubt about that in my mind, you know. So don't tell me that's not valuable on some level. I guarantee you it is, you know, in the right setting, without a doubt, you know. So this whole concept of, you know, women not being able to do this job, it's just a ridiculous notion. Ridiculous notion. I mean, you guys could do everything from pull feeder to mix the show. I don't care. You have the capability to do those things, you know.
And have babies.
Well, that makes you stronger than all of us. Trust me.
I'm just playing, but true. Yeah.
Anytime I even hint that my wife is weak at anything, she plays the baby card.
She should.
Three kids, no meds. Just saying. I think I'm stronger than you are.
No meds. God bless her.
Yeah, good for her.
Oh, man. And she had one. I hope I'm not talking out of school. She had one baby that was, I mean, I have a, my youngest son is about 6'2 right now. And he was born at 10 pounds 7, you know.
God help y'all.
Yeah. So I don't ever question that anymore. You know, I learned my lesson there. Don't go there. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Becky, there for the Live Sound Summit that's happening this week right now, Laureen, and I'm not sure I'm going to say her name right, Bohanan, she's actually doing a talk on using all your tools, the science and application of men, women hearing in in-ear monitors and the differences between the two.
Ooh, that sounds juicy. So,
yeah, I'm really interested in that because you're right. We do, and not all parts of our womanhood have this maybe, but we do experience things differently. It's part of what makes us women versus others. And, you know, some women might be more sensitive to frequencies and stuff like that, but we are different.
And honestly, I'm not even implying that they mechanically hear different, even though I'm sure they do, but I'm just saying they listen differently. You know, they hear music in a different way than we hear music.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, we're just driven by different things, you know, emotionally. So
totally.
No question that they do that. And there's gotta be some value in that at some level there.
I think for myself in the last, probably, I would say 8 to 10 years, have seen a lot of guys that are, you know, around your age or whatever, that are starting to share their knowledge more so than not. And I was having this conversation with somebody yesterday. You know, do you think that's something that just comes with age? As we get older, we just desire to share what we know with other people? Or do you think it's the culture that's changing, where we're like, you know what, enough of this hoarding our knowledge, let's all make one another better by sharing?
Yeah, this is a long story here. So,
yeah,
you know, I think, I mean, some of this bleeds back to the early days of record production. It just does. That's the DNA of this idea of hoarding things, because there was leverage in it. You know, in the early days of studios, when records were being made, you know, a record would come out and people would be going, how the hell did they do that? You know?
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, that was leveraged by the people that made those records to say, hey, I know how to make records sound like that, you know. So that's kind of bled into our world, but I think it's completely irrelevant in the live sound world. I just do. And I think it's irrelevant overall. And I'll just say this, I mean, it's part of what's driven me to be, I always get so uncomfortable calling myself an educator, but somebody who's willing to share everything I'm doing. I don't care. You know, you want to know how I'm doing it? This is how I'm doing it. Why people hold on to that, I don't know. Maybe I got to believe there's some sort of security blanket in holding on to it. I certainly haven't done it more with age. I've been doing it since I was very, very young. And honestly, it was driven by one of the very first, it was honestly driven by the very first experience and access I had to live sound with Russell Pope with Supertramp. You know, I was a 14-year-old kid, and he pulled me up on the riser and showed me around the console. And from that moment on, I mean, I didn't care what show it was at. If I was standing in front of a house and somebody said, hey, you know, I saw somebody kind of starry-eyed looking at it. Hey, come on up. You want to take a look around? You know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm doing the same thing with my peers. I've always kind of lived with this mindset of, look, I can show you everything I can do here. You're going to get a different result. This is not a paint-by-numbers game. It's not a paint-by-numbers game. I can show you some of the techniques I use. You use them. we're not going to get the same result. We could be mixing the same audio and not get the same result. So that's why I'm not protective of show files or any of that stuff. You want them? Here, have them. I don't care.
I have never been a believer in hoarding and protecting information like that, but I am an educator, and I've been in education just as long as I've been working, you know, live sound. So I always found that to be so important. So I appreciate that, because hoarding it only, it doesn't allow you to pass on your knowledge, and it doesn't allow you to live posthumously by, you know, pushing that and training new people and helping them. That's the biggest reason why we do this.
Especially so in live sound, there's no legacy. There's no audio legacy of your work.
No.
It evaporated in the air when the house lights came up, you know? I mean, so, you know, if you want a legacy, maybe that's the way to do it. Although I think it's fascinating right now, you know, as soon as the downturn happened, right? I remember thinking this and having this thought, and it turned out to be true. I was like, oh, everybody's going to think they're a teacher now.
Yeah.
Yep.
Everybody's going to be teaching now. And it's, you know, I've seen some of the things that are going on, and I feel confident in saying, just because you know it, don't mean you can teach it. It is two very, very different things there, you know.
Absolutely. Being a teacher is one of the harder disciplines. I used to think live sound was a hard job, but teaching is much more difficult.
Oh, it is. And I'll be totally honest. I mean, part of the attraction for me teaching, because I've been doing seminars since, you know, and mixing. And I used to hold a 5-day seminar, you know, 2 or 3 times a year starting in the late 90s. But one of the things that it really drove me in doing that, because I took it so seriously, was, you know, it forces you to really, really understand it. Like, you can't, you know, I tried to have total respect for this idea of, you can't stand in front of people that are looking at you as a teacher and fluff the answer. You know, if you don't know, you got to say you don't know. Don't give them the wrong answer, you know. So be able to back up anything you're teaching, you know, with some, you know, credible knowledge here of, okay, this is why I'm doing it, and this is how it works. Because I've suffered from it. I actually, it just happened to me again probably about 2 months ago, where I got ready to state something publicly, and it was something that I was taught very young, and it's wrong. It's absolutely wrong, but it's still stuck on my hard drive. And I sat there and typed it out and got ready to send it, and I thought, no, dipshit. That's wrong. That's wrong. You got to repair that. You can't say that publicly. It's wrong, you know?
Yeah.
And that was from somebody teaching me that as absolutely credible, you know, information, but it was wrong. It was incorrect.
Yeah, it's part of the student's journey to fact check. Not that you shouldn't trust your instructors, because we all try very hard to be credible and to, you know, provide the best information and experiences that we can. But I mean, I was taught from a young age to question authority and to question and to learn how to research and get the right answers. So I think that's a really valuable thing that I really hope people are doing right now when they have the time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a fundamental of science, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, this is the way it's been done, but
I'm sure at one point nobody questioned the idea of the sun traveling around the earth. Everybody just took that as fact until somebody said,
"Seems legit.
I'm going to go check on that."
Yeah.
I'm going to go check on that and make sure. And here we are today. So.
And here we are. So is that kind of how you got into the whole digital realm? Obviously our industry was going from analog to digital, but is that kind of your personality where you're, oh man, I'm going to dive into this and I'm going to check it out? Because at the time, I'm assuming everyone who was around your age was, oh, hell, this digital world, it's never going to sound as good as analog, and this is BS, and, you know.
Well, you know, here's the irony of all of it. I'm going to start with this, okay? All these guys, I'll call them curmudgeons, all these old curmudgeons that are anti-digital are the same guys that use recordings to tune their PA systems that are 100% digital. They were recorded on digital tape machines, mixed on digital consoles, and they think those are the best sounding records ever made. And they used during the PA system. It's like, what?
Yeah.
Does anybody see some irony in this right now? Let me just check. But, you know, in terms of the digital thing, I mean, I'd been exposed to it very early on, you know. I mean, even, you know, helping out with some of the Def Leppard records in the 80s. I mean, those, you know, everything past Pyromania was done digitally. You know, so
yeah.
you know, I got exposed to it pretty early, certainly before it was ever in live sound. And I mean, kind of the way I got involved with digital design was I was on tour, and this drives home a central theme of all things that we should always talk about is it's who you know in this business. It's not about what you can do, it's who you know. But I toured with a guy named Dave LaBolt in the mid-80s with an artist named Laurie Anderson, you know, kind of a performance artist. Mm-hmm. And he was the keyboard player. And we went around the world together, you know, and he and I got kind of tight. I was mixing monitors on the tour, and I remember this because we were in Japan. We were out shopping in Akihabara, and we saw what we believe were the first SPX-90s, and we bought them there. We walked away with like four of them out of Tokyo thinking, oh my gosh, this is the most unbelievable device I've ever seen. We've got to have these. You know, probably paid $3,000 a piece for them or something. You know, some crazy thing. Long story short, that was mid-80s. We part ways on the tour. I kind of go my direction. He goes his direction. He actually goes on to work at DigiDesign and becomes the driving force to make Pro Tools what it is today. I mean, he turned that into a true studio instrument.
Wow.
True studio recorder. But around 1999, 2000, my phone rang. And I hadn't heard from David in years. And he says, hey, we're thinking about making a digital console. You want to come up and get involved in it? And so I said, well, I'll come up and talk to you about it. Have a look at it, you know. So we go there, and there's nothing done on it. I mean, it's purely in conception at this point. And he goes, you think we should make a live sound console? And I said, absolutely not. Absolutely not. You should not do it. Nobody wants Pro Tools at their concert mixing. You know, nobody wants to mix in Pro Tools at a concert. You know, because I didn't even grasp all the things about it. But in a pretty short amount of time, I started to realize, oh, hey, wait a minute now. You're going to do a purpose-built product, and we can use plugins and processing. You know, all of a sudden, now the napkin drawings made sense. You know, I was like, okay, wait a minute. Yeah. I'll get involved in that, sure. But that said, I kept it very secret. I mean, it was very quiet. I didn't tell anybody about that for a good 4 or 5 years. You know. So.
Were you doing playback stuff before Digital Worlds? I read that somewhere a little bit, like with ADATs and whatnot.
Well, yeah, the ADATs were the piece of DNA that is responsible for Virtual Soundcheck. That's what made Virtual Soundcheck a possibility. And I started doing that. I put that system together kind of 1993, 94, you know, somewhere around 94, late 94.
I was going to say, I was in college in 98, and I learned on a playback ADAT situation. Yeah. But we had to, you know, either put it in the insert of the console, or we had to unplug and then plug everything back in so we had playback on, you know, or hook the ADAT up to the right side of the console because we didn't have layers, you know.
Yeah.
And so your playback's over there and all that. It's, yeah, all sorts of fun.
I mean, I won't go down the whole bloody story of it, but, you know, it was just two or three things just happened to happen right at the right time to make that happen. Like, I think if I wasn't on the console that I was on, I wouldn't have been able to do it and make it work, which was Gamble EX56 at the time. So it had built-in patch bay, you know, it had mic scrambling, so you could replace microphones with, you know, another source just with a multi-way connection change, you know, things like that. You know, so there was all kinds of possibilities there. And, you know, the ADAT had only been out, about a year at that point, you know, so...
And you that know, came it, with its own issues.
Well, let's not go there. We'll be here for a couple of days. So you see all this gray hair and all this missing hair? That's all ADAT hair, I promise you. So. But, it, you know,
I got a few of those ADAT streaks, too, I think.
I mean, it all proved itself out over that period of years there where I thought, you know, this is real. This is for real. And especially so once I moved to Pro Tools, about 1980. Or 97, 98, probably right around there, I moved it all over to a big Pro Tools 64-track Mix Plus system and had that out on the road doing exactly the same thing I was doing with ADATs. I think that's part of what drove David to call me because they found out about it. You know, somehow the word got back to DigiDesign that I was doing this, and they were like, you're doing what? Are you crazy? You know, I don't think they fully understood what was going on, but I was like, brought them out and showed them, and they were like, oh. That's really, really cool. And I was like, yeah, it's pretty good.
But that playback has revolutionized our industry as far as education goes. You know, for me, then almost everyone I've ever trained on a board, I'm playing back tracks.
It is. And this is probably the proudest thing I have in my body about that whole concept, because you have to really put it in context of what the world was like pre-playback with virtual soundcheck. Because the world previous to that was, if you wanted to learn how to do this gig, you were going to learn to do it on the job.
Yeah.
In front of people. Because the only time there's any sources coming into your console is either in soundcheck or with an audience sitting there. So, you know, over the course of, 10 or 15 years, we watched people get their 10,000 hours of mixing in front of people. You know, yeah. So that's why the industry was suffering so bad, for a while, because people didn't have mixing skills. Now, I was really fortunate. I mean, I'd love to tell you this was all a well-devised plan, but it wasn't. I was really fortunate to have a fair amount of experience in the studio mixing records. You know, so I had a mixer's kind of mindset when I came, and a mixing imprint on my brain when I came to the live sound console. You know, I definitely approach things differently than a lot of live sound engineers in the era that I started in.
So let's talk about that for a little bit. I've never been a studio engineer, but we have a lot of sound girls that are studio engineers out there. Has that changed how they learn how to engineer in the studio also?
Well, engineering in the studio is not the same as it used to be. I mean, again, you kind of have to take it in context. Remember, through the 70s, 80s, even into the 90s, the studio was an ensemble environment, right? I mean, we were tracking bands. When you're doing bed tracks and tracking the band, that's very similar to what we do in live sound.
Right.
Today, that's not the case. We very few. I mean, very few records are recorded in ensemble.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah.
It's okay. Well, we'll get the drums, or no, I've got all the guitar parts done. Now let's go put the drums on it. Things like that. So that's kind of disconnected those two worlds in terms of workflow. Right. Now we live in a world of editors now, not mixers.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
But live sound is probably the purest mixing form that we got going right now. But in terms of working in the studio, this has always been my take on it with people that I ask the question, what do you want to be? And they say a mixer. My first response is get in the studio and learn how to mix. And what I mean by learn how to mix is learn how to listen. Right? Because you're listening in high resolution. You're having to work in a pretty limited dynamic window. You've got to make things work. If you can make things work in the studio, they're going to work well live. Good is good. Right. I mean, I'm definitely on board with this. There's no PA system on the planet that can take a bad mix and make it sound better than a good mix. Okay, so you've got to learn how to mix the event. And if I see trends out there, this is the trend, and it's the one that probably bothers me the most, is I see a trend toward people wanting to there's this belief that they can get a live mix to the point where they can step back from the console and just let it happen. It's like, no, you got to be in the game.
Yeah.
You got to be in the game. You got to mix this thing, and you got to, honestly, you're going to overmix it for a live event. If you listen to that mix coming off the console for a live event, it probably sounds overmoved if it's done right. Because, I mean, think about what it's competing with in the arena. You got IMAG. You got the vocalist sitting at 40 feet high up on IMAG. That vocal better be happening in the house to match that visual,
Absolutely. Yeah.
And same thing, when the guitar player comes up and plays a solo, it better not be buried off to the left side somewhere in your mix.
Right,
It's just not going to engage people, so.
I have one question that's going to take us away from this a little bit. What is something that you are passionate about other than audio?
Well, I won't give you the cheesy answer, which is actually the right answer, which is my family. I'm totally into my family. But,
well, that's adorable. So yeah. That can be your answer.
Well, that's okay. Yeah. I mean, that should be my answer, honestly. My dogs are down at like number 7 or 8, something like that. But I really like fitness. I've gotten into this. I started about, maybe 10, 12 years ago getting back into shape and had a reawakening of what that actually means to me mentally and physically. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of all over that. I'm in the process of training for an Ironman in October right now. So.
Ooh.
we'll see how that goes. It's been a little tough with the shutdown because all the pools and all the swimming applications have been shut down. So I it may end up disrupting my training. But I'm really
into
that.
You live in Arizona, though, so you can, like, run up the hills and all that
stuff.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, that's great. Oh, I mean, this is Mecca for biking and hiking here. I mean, it's Mecca. So many incredible places here. So, yeah. As long as you can deal with the heat. The heat's pretty tough this time.
Right.
We're Floridians, so we have a little bit of an idea.
I'll tell you something. I would take this heat over Florida heat.
Oh, totally. Because the heat,
any day of the week.
You can't breathe.
Oh, man.
I feel the absolute opposite of that.
No, Bex.
I do. After doing a loadout in, like, Phoenix or whatever.
You just feel like you're on fire a little bit. It's okay.
It's like someone is blowing a hot air dryer directly into your face and you can't even get a breath. That's how I felt during the last load in I did in Phoenix. So
yeah, summer shows in Phoenix are tough. I'll give you the old saying, right? Well, it's a dry heat.
No.
But as someone once
like
famously said, yeah, so is an oven. I wouldn't live in an oven either. Okay, so
good times.
Okay, last question, Becky, I think.
Yeah, sure, why not?
This is Becky's favorite, I think.
Uh-oh.
Do you have a roadie nickname?
This is my favorite question.
Oh, wow.
That you were willing to share.
A roadie
nickname. Nobody wants to
share
it. Come on.
I don't think I do.
Seriously? Come on.
If
I do,
is there one that you don't know about?
Okay, now let's just examine that question. Is there one you don't know about? I'm going to say probably, but I doubt that it's PG rated. You know? That asshole at the front of house, you know, that's probably my roadie name. You know.
I love that. I love that question. I like that one. And what is your go-to beverage?
Oh, my go-to beverage is, well, it's either coffee or iced tea, one of the two.
Coffee has been let me
contextualize that. Do you mean on duty or off duty?
Either one.
On duty is definitely tea or coffee. Off duty is if it's got tequila in it, it's got a chance. So there you go.
I like you more and more, Robert.
I mean, my entire arrest record is all revolves around tequila, so that's all right. These are stories for the follow-up podcast.
I was going to say, we could talk about that. Like, I can get on board with that. Mine looks similar to yours.
Oh, man.
Nice. So where can we find you and find out information about you and what Robert's up to next and all of that fun stuff?
Oh, man. If you can't find me right now, you aren't trying hard enough. I'm telling you. I've even had people say to me, dude, seriously. Tap the brakes a little. Slow down a little, you know. But you can – I'll just give you what I'm doing throughout the week and then, you know, a few other things. So on Mondays,
absolutely,
which is today, I run this open Zoom room called The Lab. And it's just open invitation. You know, sign up and I'll send you an invitation to the room. And we go in there and just deep dive on topics that – people rarely actually want to talk about. Certainly manufacturers don't really want to talk about it, things like that. I have a big setup here where we can do real demos and real examinations of any kind of workflow we want to do. So that's been pretty popular. I'm on my sixth one of those now. We do it the first three Mondays of every month. And then every other Wednesday I do an actual Avid webinar, which is just on the console itself. It's on S6L. And then on Fridays I've started this thing called the Back Lounge, which is a completely social gathering. It is decidedly non-technical. We do not allow technical talk in there, just like in the Back Lounge. No talking about the show after the show. But, you know, we're talking about social issues there, you know, professional issues, all kinds of things. Like, obviously, we've been talking about the shutdown over the past little bit of time. You know, we've been trying to get the perspective of promoters and tour managers, everybody, you know, everybody's welcome to that. It's not an audio thing at all. I'm sure over the next little bit of time here, we're going to start covering a wealth of topics, and there, none the least of which is diversity in our business. I may start that topic this week, funny enough, because I had some other people reach out to me, not just on with women in the industry, but, you know, people of color in the industry, you know, why is it so out of balance, et cetera? It's worthy of that discussion, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the only way we're going to solve this is to is to get it on the table and get everybody comfortable yep. with it. Because, you know, I've said this before, and, you know, this is the challenge for the sound girls and all the people of color. It's a challenge to grab this mentality here, is that, look, it doesn't matter how great a mixer you are. You know, it doesn't matter how great a rigger you are. In that environment on tour, you got to be able to hang. I mean, you got to be able to hang and be with people and get along with people. You know, because I've watched it happen countless times where the guy that could absolutely do the job was just slightly or just subtly pushed to the side and said, no, we can't have that guy out here. You know? So, you know, you got some challenges to come up with. That.
Yeah.
And part of the way to do that, obviously, is you got to create allies to your cause and have them want you out there. You know, not because of your skill, because of your personality and other pieces of it. You know, what else can you bring to the table besides your skills? You know?
Robert, thank you so much. That's about all the time we have for today. And again, we will do another one of these to talk about tequila and other fun things. But
I'll be early
so
for
much.
That one.
Right? thank you so much for being an ally to Sound Girls for helping bridge that gap for us. We appreciate that. And I'm going to tune into your back lounge talk, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, come on by for that. Yeah. I would encourage you to be there for it because, you know, it's going to be meaty discussion there. I mean, it really is. Because, you know, we don't record it. You know, it's a completely open forum. Mm-hmm. You know, it, as they say in the movie, it's the safe tree. You can talk here as you want to talk. It's not live. I mean, it's not live as in broadcast. If you're in the room, you're the one hearing it. So, yeah, I would encourage you to be there and participate in that. It's a great little social event.
Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you, guys. Robert. Thanks for the invite. Long overdue. I'm glad I got to do this. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, we're pretty new at this still, so.
You're doing awesome.
You're still on the intro ground floor of us.
Thank you.
All right, guys, thank you so much. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Sound Girls podcast. You can find out more information on the website, soundgirls.org.